47 and verses 1 through 12. Ezekiel chapter 47, verses 1 through 12. And I call this the great change. I think you'll figure out why that's true as we go along. But here's what this passage says. The man brought me back to the entrance to the temple, and I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east. The water was coming down from under the south side of the temple, south of the altar. He then brought me out through the north gate and led me around the outside to the outer gate facing east, and the water was trickling from the south side. As the man went eastward with a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits, and then led me through water that was ankle deep. He measured off 1,000 cubits, and led me through water that was knee deep. He measured off 1,000, and led me through water that was up to the waist. And he measured off 1,000, and now it was a river that I could not cross, because the water had risen and was deep enough to swim in, a river that no one could cross. He asked me, "Son of man, do you see this?" And then he led me back to the bank of the river, and when I arrived there, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river. He said to me, "This water flows toward the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah, where it enters the Dead Sea. And when it empties into the sea, the salty water there becomes fresh. Swarms of living creatures will live wherever the river flows. There will be large numbers of fish, because this water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will live. Fishermen will stand along the shore from En-Gedi to En-Eglaim. There will be places for spreading nets. The fish will be of many kinds, like the fish of the Mediterranean Sea. But the swamps and marshes will not become fresh. They will be left for salt. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fail. Every month they will bear fruit, because the water from the sanctuary flows to them. Their fruit will serve for food, and their leaves for healing." So that's the passage that we're looking at. Unfortunately, unlike many passages that have a lot of symbolism in it, there's no explanation for what that symbolism means. So we have to work on the context, we have to work on parallel passages, and we have to work on what the New Testament says for us to gain meaning from this passage beyond what it says literally. So here's an overview of the lesson. 3 points, just like John said, I had to boil it down to 3 points. We're going to talk about context and something called intertextuality, miracles and symbols of the text, and Jesus and Ezekiel's river. So let's first talk about context and intertextuality. When I'm talking about context, I'm talking about the flow of ideas from the beginning of Ezekiel through this passage, which is one chapter from the very end of the book of Ezekiel. So if you go back to Ezekiel chapter 8, you'll find something terrible, something horrible was going on in the temple courts. The people were committing idolatry right in the temple courts. Not only were the people doing this, but the leaders of the people were leading them in idolatrous practices right in the temple courts. And in verse 17, God says, "Is it a trivial matter for the house of Judah to do the detestable things they are doing here?" Now, what's the influence or what's the effect of what they're doing in the temple courts? "Must they also fill the land with violence and continually provoke me to anger?" So what they were doing in the temple courts had an effect in the whole land. It was filling the whole country with violence. People were saying to themselves, if God doesn't care what happens in his own temple, then he doesn't care what we do out here in the country, throughout the nation of Israel. And they were committing all kinds of terrible acts toward one another, violence, stealing from one another, murdering one another, abusing and neglecting. And in between these two passages, the one in chapter 8 and the one in chapter 47, where the temple has been rebuilt and the priesthood has started up again, and now the leaders are serving the Lord the way they should serve him, and then the water comes from under the temple and it waters the whole land and affects it positively. In between those two things is chapter 33, verse 21, where a refugee finally arrives where Ezekiel is among the people who are exiled, and he says, Jerusalem has fallen. So the whole nation and the temple have been destroyed by the Babylonians. And that's the punishment for the rebellion and the idolatry that they did back in chapter 8 and the surrounding chapters. So that's the context through this passage. The people were unfaithful. The city was destroyed. After that, they turned back to God, and God promises a restoration. And this flowing river is part of that restoration, or it's symbolic of that restoration. So now let's talk about intertextuality. So if you look this up in Wikipedia, it'll say the relationship between texts. Or another way of saying it would be the way one passage relates to another passage. And when we look at intertextuality for Ezekiel chapter 47, we find that there's a whole number of prophecies that talk about this water coming forth from the temple. It starts in the book of Joel. Joel is the first in that chain of prophecies. Joel 3:18 says, in that day a fountain will flow out of the Lord's house and will water the valley of acacias. Acacia is a tree that usually subsists with very little water, and so it's now getting water in abundance where usually that water isn't available. So Joel is 200 years before Ezekiel, most scholars believe. And so Joel is already predicting this coming of the water to bless the nation. Then there's the passage in Ezekiel, which is around the year 550 or so. And it talks about the water coming out of the temple, going east down into the great rift valley of which the Jordan and the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea are part, and it turns the Dead Sea into a freshwater lake and fills it with fish, even the fish of the Mediterranean Sea, and fishermen line up on the shores, and there's all kinds of fruit, and the leaves of the fruit trees are for the healing. Then Zechariah, which came about maybe 30 years after Ezekiel, 520 or so, Zechariah 14:8 says, on that day living water will flow from Jerusalem, half to the eastern sea and half to the western sea, in summer and in winter. So Zechariah is adding one little part of this and saying that it goes both directions. Jerusalem's up on a hill, kind of on the continental divide between the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean, and this water is flowing in both directions. And it flows all year round, not just in the rainy season. And then, of course, the book of Revelation definitely alludes to this passage in Ezekiel. In Revelation 22, verses 1 and 2, it says, then the angel showed me the river of the water of life as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great city, street of the great city. And on each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And he goes on to say, the leaves are for the healing of the nations. Definitely alluding to this passage in Ezekiel. But again, not explaining what it means, but it does call it the river of the water of life, which really helps us to understand. So if we look at the passage in a little bit more detail, we notice some miracles and some additional symbolism. First, there's the miraculous increase of the river's volume. Most of us realize that if a water stream has only one source, a lot of times that water is going to diminish as it gets farther from the source rather than increase. A good example of that is the Pecos River, which in 2011 went dry for about 17 miles of its course. And then in 2012, it became a dry riverbed for 35 miles. This weird-looking fish is called an alligator gar, which was one of the fish that normally is in that river, but in 2011-2012, there wasn't any water at all. The fish died. That's what happens normally if there's only one source for a river. It diminishes as people use the water from that source. A lot of times, I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico, a lot of times people would take the water out of the Rio Grande to irrigate their crops, and the water would get smaller and smaller, and there were many times in Albuquerque where you could wade across the Rio Grande because all the water had been diverted to the irrigation ditches. But this water becomes more and more and more abundant the further it flows. There's something miraculous going on if there's only one source for that water. And the text is talking about the temple being the only source for this river. The second thing is that this water, in another miraculous occurrence, when it hits the Dead Sea, instead of just diluting the Dead Sea for a few hours or a few days and then getting absorbed into its extreme saltiness, this water actually turns the Dead Sea into a sweet freshwater lake. And that's an amazing, miraculous transformation. There was an expedition in 1848 that went to the Dead Sea. Some Englishmen with scientific instruments were measuring the Dead Sea. They were figuring out how wide it is, how deep it is, how much salinity it had, and all of that. They tell a terrible ordeal kind of a story about their experiences, and here are the adjectives that they used to describe what happened when they finally arrived at the Dead Sea. They said it was putrid, it was nauseating, it stung the eyes. They said there was a storm and the spray from the Dead Sea would encrust their skin. It would sting wherever it hit. And the whole land around it was barren, it was desolate, the water was leaden, the fish from the Jordan would come into the Dead Sea and immediately die, and the bodies of those fish would go off to the shore. It was just a terrible place, and he said, we understood why it was called the Lake of Death. And that's the way it's always been, and that's the way it is even today. Although they are slowly drying it up with potash factories on its shores. But for water to come to that sea and then turn it into a freshwater lake is just an amazing, miraculous transformation. And then the fruit trees is another miracle. What you see on the right in this slide is a demonstration of the cycle of the fruit tree for a year. First it brings forth the buds, then it brings flowers. Those flowers get pollinated, it starts bearing fruit, the fruit comes to ripeness, and people harvest whatever fruit it is. Then all the leaves fall off and it goes through a time of dormancy, and that's the annual cycle for a fruit tree. But this passage says that these fruit trees are bearing fruit how often? Every month there's more fruit. In a good year, a fruit tree will bear fruit once a year, but not every month. That's a miraculous thing. A miracle is going on. And when something miraculous, like miracle of the abundant water, miracle of the salt water becoming fresh, miracle of the fruit trees bearing 12 times more often than they normally do, we know that there's some symbolism going on in this passage. And the symbolism doesn't stop there. When we look at the fish and the sea creatures, and it says those fish are like the fish of the Mediterranean, all kinds of fish, not just the kinds that are good for Jews to eat as food, according to Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14, but all kinds of fish. And people are lining up on the shore, and there are the fishermen, and they are hauling in the catch. Genesis 49 and Deuteronomy 33 talk about the blessings to each one of the tribes, and one of those blessings is Zebulun, who is the fishermen who are going to be along the sea, the Mediterranean and the Sea of Galilee, catching fish, and Naphtali is going to be right next to them. So those two tribes, one person talking about this passage from Ezekiel says that if God wanted fishermen to bring in the catch for the gospel, who would he choose? People from Zebulun and Naphtali. And those are the people that populated Galilee at the time of Jesus. So Jesus is walking along the shore, and he finds these Zebulun fishermen, and he says, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." And he says, that's what Ezekiel is all about. Or maybe another way of putting it, to turn it around, is to say Jesus read Ezekiel and he said, here's how we're going to fulfill this. I'm going to go look for Zebulun fishermen to be the fishers for the kingdom. Anyway, and speaking of Jesus, let's talk about how Jesus understood this passage in Ezekiel 47. On the last and greatest day of the feast, John chapter 7, verses 37 and following says, Jesus stood up and said in a loud voice, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me, and let them drink whoever believes in me. As Scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from his belly." I'm making it say what I think it's supposed to say based on the parallelism between the first and the second lines. If you look it up in your Bible, you might have a different wording there. Let anyone who is thirsty come to me. And then, it says it a little differently because the punctuation is different. But the one that I'm going with is in the margin of the NIV. And it says, "Let him drink whoever believes in me." That's parallel to the first line. And then it goes on to say, "As Scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from his belly." Not the one who believes in me, but Jesus as the provider of this water is what this passage is talking about. And it goes on to explain it. John goes on to explain it. "By this he meant the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were later to receive. Up to that time, the Spirit had not yet been given because Jesus had not yet been glorified." So verse 39 explains that Jesus is going to be giving the Spirit to those who believe in him. To those who are thirsty and seeking him, he will give the Spirit. And Jesus is making this offer to everyone at the Feast of Tabernacles, right at the point where in the feast they have this great ceremony of the water from the rock. And Jesus is saying, "I'm going to provide the living water." So, possible meanings of this passage from Ezekiel, the water seems to be the Spirit, at least based on John chapter 7. So this water that is abundant, that is miraculously growing bigger and bigger and bigger, that's the Spirit. It is a constant supply, and it is a supply that is inexhaustible. It's never going to run out. The fish seem to be people, and the fish being in such a wide variety like the Mediterranean is the supply of the Spirit for the people of all of these different kinds. And the fruit are the blessing of God in the world, that God's Spirit being given out to all flesh, as it says in Acts chapter 2, quoting Joel 2, is the blessing that God brings to the entire world. And the promise is conditional. Listen to what Jesus says again. He says, "If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me. And whoever believes in me, let him drink." Okay, so there are conditions for the outpouring of the Spirit. And those conditions in this promise that Jesus makes, those conditions are for a continuing coming to Jesus. Whoever comes to him and comes and comes and comes, and whoever believes in him and continues to trust him and continues to seek that living water, then he's going to provide that. And Revelation picks up on this in Revelation 22. At the very end, it says, "The Spirit and the Bride say, 'Come,' and let the one who hears say, 'Come,' and let the one who is thirsty come, and let the one who wishes take the free gift of the water of life." That's what Christ provides for each one of us if we will come and if we will seek him and seek the blessing that he provides. He's going to provide that on and on, and it's going to transform our lives, and it's going to be super abundant, and it will never run out. Let's sing this song to encourage each other, and if you want to respond to this invitation and ask for prayers or to become a Christian, do so while we stand and sing. Free 'tis for you and me.